I'm going to look at access for a few more minutes. Okay, my turn, guys. I'm going to look at access for a few more minutes, so I'm going to go into the 1230 class and kind of do a review a little bit of the SQL. And then I'm going to move on and talk about some things that are in the book. So I'm clicking on the 1230 classes, and it's called StuDB, and I'm going to open that in Access. Okay. So what I'm doing here is I have that table, and it's the table we have looked at multiple times. And if I do a design view of it, you can see it's got an ID number, spelled IDNO, a STU name, major courses in GPA. And I keep using this one just because that way we can remember what the names are easily. Okay, so now to get into SQL, I click on Create, and then I click on Query Design. And then when Show Tables comes up, I say Close. That gives me SQL View. Up underneath File in the upper left-hand corner, I now have SQL View. So I click on that. And that's where I write my SQL. Okay? But because it's hard to see in class, I write it in Notepad, and then I copy and paste it up there just because it's easier to see in class. Okay, so when I write the select, I am doing a select asterisk. So I'm starting out and saying select asterisks. I don't have to use select asterisks. I can list the fields if I want to. So I could say ID number, comma, STU name, comma, GPA, if those are the three fields that I want. But I'm going to go with everything. And then I say from, and I put in the name of the table. And then I say where. And now I've got to write out my clause. So let's say I want everybody that has a GPA. Let's see. Okay, so if I want everybody that has a GPA greater than 3 and courses less than 20. Okay, so this is an and. I want both of these. Okay, so go ahead and write that if you brought it up. If you haven't brought it up, just write it in paper and pencil. But either write it in paper and pencil or write it in Access. And again, you're not going to bother with Notepad. You're going to write it right up here in the place where you write it.
Yeah. I thought select from and where
it
had to be capitalized.
No, doesn't matter. Okay? They can be capitalized. I think it looks nicer when they are, but they don't have to be. Yeah.
I'm trying to open up Access. Do I open a different file or do I just make a blank database?
I use the one that I had under the week 2 for the 1230 class.
I mean, if you already have it, that's the point. Just open it, you know what I mean?
change it and do it as an
so
old.
Then just go to create.
And save the two queries.
There you go. You should be able to do it now. I want this open. So save one as and one as or.
Yeah. Try one with an or. Try the same two conditions, but give them an or and see what that comes up with. So, I'm going to say here where GPA is greater than 3 and courses is less than 20. So, really, SQL is really just letting me write the English. My condition has to have all three things. It has to have the thing I'm testing, how I'm testing it, and what I'm testing it to. So I have the name is GPA, I'm testing for greater than, and I'm testing the greater than against 3. Okay, so I put these in here, and now I'm going to take them up and put them into SQL. And I'm going to view. And there were apparently 3 people that met that criteria. Okay? And if you notice, all of them have greater than 3 here and less than 20 here. Okay? Because this was in an and relationship. So, if I went over to the user interface, where would I put these two conditions? On what line? If I went over to the user interface, what line would these two conditions be on?
Criteria.
The criteria line. And they'd both be on the criteria line because two things in an and relationship both go on the criteria line. Okay? So, that's that. Now, if I change it to an or... So I'll go back to SQL view, and I'll change it to an or. So all I'm doing is taking the and changing it to an or. And then when I view this, I've now got a load of courses, because the people that didn't have a GPA greater than 3 have courses, okay? So I needed greater than 3 or less than 20. Okay? So if you look at here, the ones that have a GPA less than 3 have, greater than 3 have less than 20 in the courses. So it works just fine. Okay? If they have both, that's fine. It's just that they need one or the other. But if they happen to have both criteria, that's fine, like the top one does. Susan Ash has 12 courses and a GPA of 3.8, so she meets both criteria. Yeah. So that's a spelling problem. And that almost always is, as he said, but looking over your shoulder, I didn't see it. Okay, so now let's go back. And this time I want students that have an ID number greater than this, and either a major equal to BU or courses less than 20, I guess. Okay. So I want an ID number greater than 20,000, and then either major equals BU or courses less than 20. Now, what does this mean? One thing has to be true. ID number greater than 20,000 has to be true. And then either of the other two things.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Didn't we set our ID number category to short text?
Yeah.
So wouldn't that not work?
Yeah.
If it's short text?
Yeah.
So in an either
and that actually is going to come up in a minute. You're ahead of the game. So you can fix it so that it will. Yeah.
So in an either relationship, one thing on either side of the word either has to come true. Like you have to either have an ID number greater than 2,000 or have a major. I don't know, I'm
kind of
lost on that.
This one has to be true. This one here has to be true. And then either of these. So one thing has to be true, and then either of the other two. So both of the other two don't have to be true. And you're right, and that's going to come up when I do it. But you can fix it so it doesn't come up for you. Okay. What kind?
Me too.
Data mismatch?
Yeah. Okay. That's going to happen in a minute. Okay. So now, let's look at the logic. I said ID number has to be greater than 20,000. And if I get a yes, then I continue on. If I get a no, I'm out of here. Because it has to be true. If it's greater than 20,000, then I'm asking, is the major equal to BU? And if the answer is yes, I'm going to say display. If the major is not equal to BU, I have one more chance. Is the number of courses less than 20? And if it is, I'm going to display. And if it's not, then I'm going to close things up. And we'll be looking more at this. But essentially, when I close up, I close the bottom thing, and then I move up and close the next thing up, and then I move up and close the next thing at the top. Okay, so let's try writing this. ID number greater than 20,000, and either major equals BU or courses less than 20. So I'm saying select asterisks from stu table where ID number is greater than 20,000 or major equals BU and major equals BU or courses is less than 20. Okay, now what do you see wrong with this? Because this has got some problems. Well, the problems. What about the BU here? It needs quotes. If I leave it the way it is, it's going to look for a field named BU. It's not going to find a field named BU, and so it's going to give me problems. So I've got to put BU in there. In quotes. Now, forget about your problem for a minute. What about the logic? I said I wanted ID number to have to be true, and then either of the other two. Am I going to get it this way?
No.
Go ahead.
Put and after 2000. It should be.
No, and I want. But how do I make that work? Yeah.
Parentheses. Before the major and after the point.
Yep. I got to put this in parentheses. So I'm saying an either of these two things. So that tells it that the ID has to be greater than 20,000 and either of those two things. So this means it has to be true. And this is either of these. And either of these. Okay. So the first thing has to be true and either of these. Okay, so I'm going to take this. There is still one problem with it, but I want to have you see the problem. So I'm going to take this and I'm going to copy it and I'm going to go into SQL view and I'm going to put it in there. Okay, so now I'm running this, and it comes up with a data type mismatch in the criteria expression. Okay, now, I know that major is a short text. I remember that, and I've been using it all along, and had to have it in quotes, so I know that's okay. I know courses is a number. I've been testing it in a bunch of other queries. So clearly ID number is probably where the problem is. If you go back and look at the file, you'll see that ID number is short text. What Access wants is the same type on both sides. That's why we had to put the BU in quotes also, although that also would be compared to a field name. 20,000 can't be confused with a field name because field names can't be all numbers. So I'm going to go back and say, okay, and I'm going to put the 20,000 in quotes because ID number is a short text field. And since it's a short text, I have to compare the text. And text is when I put something in quotes. It becomes text or string. So now I'm comparing ID number, which is short text or text, to a text. Because it's in quotes, and in quotes it's a text. I'm comparing text to text, number to number. So I've got everything comparing correctly. And so now if I go and try to run this, I will see the results, okay? And notice all of the IDs are greater than 20,000. So these are greater than 20,000, okay? And I'm going to get to this particular thing in a few minutes when I talk about data storage, but it's kind of good to notice it now that I think about it. I didn't think about it in the last class. If you look at the way this is stored, notice these numbers are stored over against the left wall. That's a text field. They're over against the left wall. Look here. These are numbers. They're over against the right wall. Okay? So, text is stored against the left wall. And numbers are stored against the right wall. And that is one of the reasons why it can't compare text with numbers, because it's stored it very differently. The text is stored up against the left wall, and so it would compare the three there with the first thing over here, which is actually not showing that it's leading zeros, but it's actually leading zeros. So this would be stuffed with leading zeros. And so it would be comparing a three to a zero. And it can't compare numbers and text accurately. So that's why it yelled at us and told us we had to put, make them both the same type, because it knows it can't compare the different types. Okay? And so that's why it yelled at us about that. Okay. Now, there is another way I can write this. I can also write this. This is my preferred way. But I can also write it this way. In other words, I can repeat the ID number. I can say ID number greater than 20,000 and major equal to BU, or ID number greater than 20,000 and courses less than 20. I can repeat it. And that looks more the way it looks when you think about the user interface, because on the user interface, you've got to put the ID number greater than 20,000 on both the criteria line and the OR line. Okay? So what happens when the computer resolves this, it resolves this first. Okay, so it combines those two and says these two. Then it resolves this second. And then finally it says, okay, I'll resolve this one. So it says, okay, therefore this means it either has to be those two or those two. Okay, it's resolved in that order. And the third one says either the first group or the second group. So if I take this, and I got to put the quotes in because I'd forgotten the quotes. And now I copy and paste this. The results are going to be the same. They may not be the same order. Magic happens in the order that Access chooses to resolve it in. But you're going to get the same data. Get the same data, you just may get them in a different order. Okay. Questions? Okay, now if I go into SQL, user interface, rather, I'm going to click on that, and there's the user interface for this. And you can see that the greater than 20,000 is on both lines, which is what I said it had to be. The BU is on one line, the criteria line, the less than 20 or greater than 20, whichever it was, I can't read that, is on the OR line. Okay? Less than. So I have the thing that has to be true is repeated on both the criteria line and the OR line. Now, it's kind of interesting. Before, when I showed you this, I told you that it put all the fields at the front, and then it put these in the back as a no-show, because the show isn't clicked. But, in fact, it works just fine, because the SQL is winning. The SQL is what the user interface gets turned into SQL, so it's actually running the SQL. When I came back and showed the user interface, this is kind of deceptive in lots of ways because it's not showing all of the fields, and I said select asterisks, and it hasn't got these fields checked off. okay? But it's running the SQL, and so if I go back and run this, it's running the SQL. Yeah.
If you make the query for user interface, run it, and then go to SQL view, it'll generate the Microsoft SQL query?
Yes, with the 5,643 extra parentheses. And all the extra parentheses. Yeah, okay. So, I'm going to give you an assignment that I'll probably post tonight. And I'm going to say, if you pass it into me and I see 5,000 extra parentheses, then I pass it back and say, uh-uh, doesn't work. Okay? So I want the no extra parentheses in there. Parentheses are fine, but they should be used when they need to be used, not just...
To change the order, right?
Well, the way they use them, they put them around everything.
No, I'm saying if you need to use them, it's only to change the order.
Right, to change what the results. Okay. So that will produce either of the ones. When I write it with the parenthesis instead of repeating, it will still put it on both lines because this has to be true. And the has to be true is on both lines. And so I sent about 10 of these back last night, and I'll probably be sending some more back today. That have problems on the assignment because the has to be true is not being written correctly. If it has to be true, it's got to be on both lines. So, when you get it, fix it and send it back to me. Does everybody understand it now? Yeah? Honest? Promise? Okay. Okay, any other questions? All righty. Then what I'm going to do is go in and talk about some stuff in the book. I don't spend an awful lot of time in the book because you can read as well as I can. Okay? So what I do is I try to spend time in class going over the practical application of these theories, and I try to leave the theory up to you to read. But today I want to go over a few of the things that I think are important. You don't have to have your book out. I'm going to put it all up there. But if you have your book and you want it out, that's fine. But I'm going to put it all up there so you don't need it. Okay, the first thing that they talk about in the book is actually the fact of input, processing, and output. So that's what programs are about. Programs are processing. And if you're processing, you probably need some data coming in, whether the user is typing it or how it's coming in, and you need something going out. So you have processing is the program, input is what comes in, output is what you produce. Now, you can forget input, as in lots of times people will hard code numbers that they want to do a calculation with, especially scientists, into a program. And so they'll hard code the numbers. That means they write them right inside the program. And they ask the computer to do this incredible calculation. But they still want to know the answer, and the output is the answer. So you get the output out. Usually you have input, output, and as coming into the processing input. Okay, so when I write a program, the first thing I try to do is I try to understand the problem. Somebody has asked me to write a program to do something. I need to understand what it is they want me to do before I can do it. Okay. Then the second thing I do is I analyze how to do it, and I analyze the logic that is going to go into doing it. Okay? And now, when I look at logic, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to solve the problem. And very specifically how I'm going to solve it, what the program's going to do. At one point, they decided that maybe they would break up logic and the next step, which is coding. Code the program. Use the logic to help you code the program. And at one point, they decided they'd break that up, and they'd have one person do the logic and somebody else do the coding. Well, when they did that, guess who made all the money? The logic person. Because the logic is the hard part. Now, you're not going to particularly feel that when I have you writing a program, because you haven't written programs before, a lot of you. And so the code is hard when you don't know the language. But if you've been coding in that language for a couple of years, the coding is easy. It's the logic that's hard. It's figuring out what to do and how to solve the problem. And that's the part that's hard. Okay? So, we're going to write the code, and we're going to sit at the screen or whatever and write the code. And this is going to be my input. And I'm inputting it into the computer. And I'm going to have inside the computer a compiler. Okay. The book talks about there are two things. There are compilers and there are interpreters. The compiler will take, and I always put an E in there. No, it is right. I can never decide whether it's E-R or A-R at the end on compiler. I can't spell. I flunked fifth grade spelling. And it's been downhill since. So, anyway, I have the compiler. And the compiler analyzes the whole program and turns it into machine language if it can. If you've got too many errors, it can't do it. But it tries its best to turn it into machine language. But a compiler will look at the whole program and generate machine language for the whole program. An interpreter analyzes line by line. So if you make a mistake on line 3, it stops and tells you about that error. And then you go on and it stops and tells you about that error. So it analyzes line by line. Whereas a compiler is more of a big picture kind of thing. It tries to pull the whole program together into machine language. Now, the reason you have to turn it into machine language is that's what computers can run on. Computers are dumb machines. They can run with zeros and ones. They can't run with a high-level language. Programmers, I've programmed in machine language, and it's not fun. Because it's little tiny commands. It's a lot better to program, or a lot easier to program in high-level languages. Yeah.
When you say languages, is that like C++,
yep.
Java?
Yep.
HTML is a language?
No. Like, HTML is called a hypertext markup language. So it's basically because you're just putting the tags in and the CSS to mark up how you wanted to do it. Markup is a word left over from the old print days when people used to be publishing a newspaper or something and they'd put markup in the columns to tell how they wanted it to go. Well, that's what markup is, okay? And it's not really a language. To be a language, you've got to have three things. You've got to be able to handle decisions. Well, okay. You have to have three things. Sequence. In other words, you have to go through the instructions, one instruction at a time. To be a language, you have to be able to handle decisions. If it's this, do this. If it's not, do this. And we'll be covering this later. And the third thing you have to handle is loops. So you have to be able to repeat. Because if you've got 1,000 records in your database, you need to be able to process all 1,000 records. That means go through the same thing 1,000 times. And it's lovely that the dumb machine does it because they don't get bored. Okay? But if we have to go through 1,000 records, we get bored very easily. And make a lot of mistakes. If the machine can do it once, it can do it 1,000 times. And so, right. And it doesn't get bored. That's one of the big things. And it doesn't take anywhere near as much time. So anyway, I'm taking and putting the compiler inside memory. Inside the computer. Inside the computer's memory. So the computer is now running the compiler. So it is going to take my input, which is my program. Okay, this is my program. And it's going to read my program. Okay? My program can also be called source code. High-level languages are written, write the code in what's called source code. Okay, the original, the source. So now it takes the compiler, and with a little bit of luck, it will translate it into an object code. Into object code. That's machine language. We'll translate it into machine language. Now, that's if it can. It will also give you errors. Okay? And lots of times you're going to get errors. Okay? So you didn't write something correctly. You didn't follow the rules of the language. You didn't put in, you didn't spell a word right. For example, if you wanted to write something and the language had the word W-R-I-T-E, if you spelled it as W-R-I-T, it doesn't know what to do. So it's going to say, I can't translate that because I don't know what it means. So it's misuse of the language that it's catching here. It's language errors. Okay, misuse of the language. So if you misuse the language, you've got to go back over here and make the changes in your program and recompile. And as long as it keeps giving you errors, you've got to fix and recompile, fix and recompile, fix and recompile. Finally, you'll get it right. And it will create the object code, the machine language codes. So now, I'm going to take my computer, and I'm going to put the object code in there because now it can be run. It can be executed because it is now machine language. So it can now execute that code. Okay, now probably I'm going to have some data that might be on a disk, like an Access database. I'm going to have some data out there on a disk. And that data is going to be input into my program. I might also have the user putting in some at the screen. So I might have the user putting some input in at the screen as well. Okay, so I type in my query. It goes to the database and it checks all of the records in the data to see if they are, according to my query, something I want to display. And the output that it produces is a variety of output. I can put output up on the screen. I can put output on a printer. I can put output onto a disk. I have a variety of kinds of output that I can create. And so I'm going to create the output there. Okay, but that's assuming that everything went well. I'm happy with the output. The object will produce the output, and now I have to check it for accuracy. So over here, I had syntax errors. Errors in language. I had syntax errors. I misused the language. Over here, if I have errors, I am going to have to check for logic errors. Okay, taking payroll. Let's say that I put into the program that I wanted to have pay per hour of $20 and hours worked of 40. And my answer came out as 60. What does that mean I did? But what did I do? If I put in 20 and 40 and I come up with 60, what did I do? I added.
Instead of saying or.
That's right, or instead of saying multiply.
Yeah.
I should have multiplied, but I put in an add. I put in a plus sign instead of a multiply. Well, that's a logic error. The computer can't figure that out because the computer doesn't know what you're trying to do. You put in two numbers and said add them, and the computer said, fine, I can add. And it added the two numbers. What I meant to do was multiply. So I made a logic error. Okay? I messed up. And so now, if I made a logic error, I gotta come all the way back over here and change that plus sign in my program to a time sign. So I gotta come all the way over there and change my plus sign to a times. That means I've got to recompile. So I recompile, and if I didn't manage to mess up anything while I was changing it, I will get object code. If I messed up, then I gotta go back and fix that. But eventually I'll get object code. I bring the object code, I run, and now I see 800. So I say, okay, the multiply is working. But I have to check the logic errors and make sure that I've handled everything correctly. But that's me checking the output and making sure. So what people usually do is they put up test data, and they know what the answer should be because they've got some test data, and they test it on the program and see what the output is. Okay? But that's a person thing. That isn't a computer thing, because the computer doesn't know what you want it to do. It's a dumb machine. It just follows directions. And if you give the wrong directions, it's going to do the wrong thing.
So test data is to test your logic.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So you got two steps. The step in here is finding out how you wrote the code wrong, looking for syntax errors. Over here, you have to look at the output and see if the output is what you wanted to produce. You know, is this the output that I wanted? Is this the output that I was looking for? And what it's best to do is to obviously have somebody else sometimes give you some data to test so that you and they can see the output and that sort of thing. Okay. So that's what you go through when you write a program. You go through in the compiler. In the interpreter, it gives you the errors as you go along, so then you fix them, and it just keeps going through little by little. This is more of the big picture, which is why I draw this one up here. But you still have to end up with machine code that can be executed. Okay? So that when it goes through it line by line, it can generate the machine code and execute it. Questions? None? Okay. Moving right along. Okay, in your book they continue that little chat that I've got, and we will continue that as well. So they say, understanding the problem. And then they say, logic. And then they say, code the program. And then they say what I said but didn't really do on the board, which is the next thing is using the software, a compiler or interpreter, to translate the program into machine language. So you want to translate the program. And that can be done, as I said, with either a compiler or an interpreter. Then you want to test the program, and that's what we were just talking about, is you have sample data to test the program and make sure it's working. Now, usually, once you've tested it with sample data, it's a good idea to go on and test it with live data. That means real data. So if it's running against a database that you have that has 10,000 records on it, you test it and make sure at least it runs okay with 10,000, and then you pick a few of the records to see if they're accurate. But obviously you can't check all 10,000. Okay, so that's why you use test data that is designed to be tested. Then once the program has been tested and you're convinced it works, you put it into production. So, looking at the payroll thing, once I'm convinced that it's going to generate the right payroll, I can put it into production and have it produce checks. But I want to test it a zillion times before I do that, because I don't want the people that got the $60 instead of $800 coming in to see me, okay? And then the next thing I have to do is maintain the program. Okay, so as soon as you get a program done and into production and it's running, people are suddenly going to think of better ways it could have been done. And somebody's going to say, you know, these two columns that you've got are different sides. I should have asked you to put them next to each other, because I compare the data in those two columns a lot, and it would really be nice if they were next to each other. So, that's fine. I can go back and do that, but if I have to go back and do that, I'm all the way up here figuring out how with logic, coding the problem, and doing it all over again. And at the beginning, people are usually very responsive and say, okay, yeah, I can move that. Okay, yeah, I can move that. Because it's kind of a shakedown period of checking it. After a little while, however, you start saying, okay, every 3 months, we will go in, let's say, for example, every 3 months, we'll go in and make all the changes that you've asked for this program. But we're not going to keep making changes day after day after day. We're going to go in and have a scheduled maintenance. And every 3 months, we'll go in and we'll make the maintenance on it. I mean, obviously, if it's an emergency and something's not running that has to be running and our bills aren't going out or whatever, then they'll fix it right away. But the look and feel kind of things, so, gee, it would be nice if these two were next to each other, etc., those will be put into a regular schedule. That every 3 months we'll fix everything you've asked for that makes sense. Okay? So that's what you go through, and it's called the life cycle or something like that. And then they go through and explain all that stuff. The next thing that they talk about in the book that I want to mention is on page 11, if you happen to have it. And that's where I'm going to do the logic flowchart. And you've seen me do flowcharts already. I haven't done a flowchart for a whole program, but I've done flowcharts for queries. And so you've seen the flowcharts already. The other tool that people use when they're developing the logic is called pseudocode. And pseudocode is basically write it out in English, and then you can turn it into computer code. But you can think it through and write it out in English. So, for example, I might have the pseudocode for take in, pay, per hour and hours worked. Calculate or multiply them together and display the answer. So that's pseudocode for a very simple little thing, but that's pseudocode where I'm saying take in two things, multiply them, and display the answer. So when you're thinking through the logic, I personally like flowcharts because I like the visual look of the flowchart. I can follow the logic a lot better. The yeses and the noes make a lot more sense to me. Writing that out in pseudocode isn't my preferred way of doing it. But that depends on your learning style. Some people may find that they really like pseudocode. Other people will find they like the graphic side of it. Okay, so you pick the tool that you like. If you like flowcharting, terrific. If you prefer pseudocoding, terrific. And there are other tools as well, but these are the two that the book goes into and that we're going to go into. Questions? Okay. Variables and constants or littles comes up on page 15. I'm basically doing the highlights. I would like you to read the book. We're going to start looking at programming, and so I've kind of skipped the parts where they're doing the simple little programs because we're going to start doing that actually Thursday. So that is related to what's in the book. Okay, variables I can set up. Okay, and I can set up a variable. So I can say to the computer, I want you to store pay per hour. I want you to store in memory hours worked. I want you to store in memory answer. Okay? So I am setting up variables or storage areas in memory to hold things. So if somebody gives me the problem and says a 20 here and a 40 here. Okay, so these are input. It is taking in the $20 and the $40. Then it will do the processing. So it will do like the pseudocode that I just had said. It will take and multiply pay per hour by hours and give me answer. And then it can output answer. Okay, so I've got variables that hold data. Variables that hold my data. I can also have a literal or a constant. But I can have a literal, and let's say my literal is 1,000. So I've got this, and I'm saying, okay, calculate the person's pay. If the pay is greater than 1,000, then it's okay. Else, I want a raise. Okay? So if it's not greater than $1,000 a week, I want a raise. So that's a literal, because I want to compare everybody to 1,000. And if they make more than 1,000, I'm okay. If they don't make more than 1,000, a raise should be calculated. I want a raise. So that's a literal. It's the number that I'm using to compare things to. And we did that in queries a lot, where I said courses less than 20. That 20 was a literal. I was comparing it to 20. Okay. So variables are named memory locations, is what they're saying. Okay. The next thing I want to look at is on page 17, if you're following with the book. And that is assigning values to variables using the assignment sign. Okay, so there's my assignment sign. So, following through on the payroll that we've been doing, answer equals pay per hour times hours. So I have my variables in there that I defined on the last slide. I defined pay per hour, I defined hours, and I defined answer. Okay, so now I'm saying take whatever is in pay per hour, multiply it by hours. That asterisk is a multiply sign, because the closest thing on the keyboard would be an X, and they don't want to mix it up with letters of the alphabet, so they chose an asterisk for multiply. Divide is a slash, add and subtract are what you'd expect them to be. So I'm saying take pay per hour, multiply it by hours, and assign it to answer. Assign it to answer. Okay? So I do the calculation on the right. And I have my answer on the left. So I do my calculation on the right, and I assign it to the answer on the left. That's not an equal sign, as much as everybody's always told you it is. It's not anymore. It's an assignment sign. Okay? For programming, it's an assignment sign. And this is the reason why. Let's say I have the statement count, which is a variable, equals count plus one. Okay? So I have a field in memory called count. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start count out at zero. And then I'm going to do the calculation. Zero plus one is one. And I assign it back to count, and that becomes one. Next time I hit this statement, one plus one is two. I assign it to count, which means count now changes to a two. Next time I hit it, 2 plus 1 is a 3. I assign it to count. It's now a 3 up there. And I keep going through like that, assigning the new value to count. So you can see that's not an equal sign, because count does not equal count plus 1. What I'm saying there is do the calculation on the right and assign it to the answer on the left. Well, in this case, I'm using count to do the calculation, but I'm also using count to take in the answer. So count is changing. Okay? I take in count, I add one to it, and I put it back in count. Look at what's in it, add one to it, put it back in count. And I keep going through that over and over again. Questions? Yeah?
When you said asterisk is to multiply and /time to divide, is that a forward slash or backward?
Forward. Backward slash frequently has other meanings.
Like /backslash.
Yeah, but it also has other meanings in calculation. I think it has something to do with remainder in most of them.
Okay. So it's the one underneath the /forward/, right?
It's the one with the question mark. It's okay. The key, yeah, that has the question mark on it.
Isn't that a /backslash?
All right, it's the one that goes this way. I don't know what it's called. It's the one that goes that way.
Yeah, because the one in websites is the /.
All right.
It's the same one.
All right. I probably flunked vocabulary in fifth grade, too. So that's an assignment sign. Okay. Order of operations, which is sort of mentioned in there. Okay. We know from access that parenthesis, I guess that's out of it, resolve first. Parenthesis, whatever. They're resolved first. Then if we're doing logic, we know that adds are resolved before ORs. So if you're looking at something in logic, it's adds are resolved before ORs. And everything is done left to right. It moves left to right. If you're looking at math, then after the parenthesis, you get into exponentiation. Yeah, right. Multiply or divide. And add or subtract.
So it follows PEMDAS when you do math on code?
That's, I've heard that word before.
Yeah, that's the new way they teach order of operations.
Yeah, right.
P equals parentheses, equals exponents, MD equals multiply divide.
No, that's fine.
Subtract.
That's fine. I think of it in a totally different world.
Yeah.
Okay, exponentiation, multiply or divide, add or subtract. I don't have initials for it. But if you have initials, that works beautifully. Okay, so that's the order of operations. So when you're doing math, it's basically algebra. You've got to throw in parenthesis. You've got to realize that if you put two things together with a multiply and then two things together with a plus, it's going to do the multiply first and then the plus. And again, we'll look at that as we're doing something in math. Okay, the next thing that they talk about is on page 19, data types and variables. Okay? So basically, when you start talking about data types, you've got text or string, you can call it either one, and you've got numbers. Now, you've seen this in Access because you've gone in and you made a database and you've said this field is short text and you've said this field is a number, this one is single, this one is double, but they're all numbers. Different languages and different databases will fine-tune this a little bit so that you can have short text and long text and character and whatever else. And then numbers can be integers or decimals. So they will fine-tune it. But the big picture is they're either text or numbers. Numbers can have the digits from 0 to 9. They can have a negative or a plus sign in them. And they can have a decimal point in them. Okay? If it's broken down, then only some can have the decimal point. As in, Access integers can't have a decimal point. But single, double, decimal can. Okay? So, if you store a number, or if you store 1, 2, 3 as string, it will store like that. And we saw that a minute ago when we looked at Access. When you store it as a number, it will do it like this. Okay? It stores it up against the left wall and the right wall. And we saw that a few minutes ago when I showed it to you in Access. So text is up against the left wall. And numbers are up against the right wall. Now, as far as filling, most of them will do filling, as in leaving zeros in here to fill, and leaving spaces in here, and a diamond indicates a space, leaving spaces to fill. So they will, you know, have spaces after a text box and zero in front of the number. So you can see that if you try to compare these two, they're not going to compare equal. The first character of the string is a 1. The first character of the number is a 0. 1 and 0 aren't the same. So it's not going to compare equal. So data types are important. And again, there are two big pictures, text and numbers. And then a lot of languages will fine-tune that and break it down like Access did and give you categories within. But they're all basically text or numbers. Okay? So lots of times you have to specify data types, and then you want to be careful, too, about size. Okay? Size should be the same for comparison, if possible. Sometimes you're comparing two numeric fields and they're not, but if you are defining them, in other words, if you define them, you should make them the same size. So if you're defining two fields that you know you want to compare, you should make them the same size. Okay? Just because it works easier if you make them the same size, if you define them. Okay. And you don't get to do that in Access, but in some languages you do get to do the size. Okay. The rest of it is talking about programming, and we're going to wait until we actually are looking at some programs to do that. So, I am done. Okay? So if you have any questions, you can stay and ask for help. Otherwise, we're done.
Here until 3, so... and then tomorrow, I'll be here.
I'll be here. I can stay after 3 as long as somebody has told me prior to 3 that they're coming in. But I'm going to leave at 3 if nobody's around. But if you tell me before that, in other words, if you tell me now that you'll be back at 3, then I can handle that. I can stay later.
I'll be here from 2 to 4 tomorrow in K-118. And then Thursday, I'll be here. Thank you.
Right.